This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
We are sort of just about up to time for this session, but I'll extend it so that you can have some questions. There's one down here to start us off.
Andy Forbes, Hertford Regional College. Back to the first presentation, Barrett. Just on the accreditation process, it's just really for information. Once you are a highly trusted partner, is that in perpetuity or is there some sort of time period? And secondly, beyond the 2012 deadline, what's the process by which there will be admission to the trusted partner?
Right. Highly trusted status is at the moment yearly. So you have to renew on a yearly basis. We're looking at that as part of the review of the highly trusted criteria, but it wouldn't be. The license is for 4 years. Highly trusted is yearly, and we're looking at that at the moment, and we'll publish on that. After April 2012, the statement of intent does mention legacy sponsors. So if a sponsor cannot get highly trusted sponsorship and or accreditation, we're looking, the statement of intent does talk about legacy sponsors whereby they won't be able to sponsor new students. They will stay on our sponsorship register as long as they meet the basic sponsorship criteria for all those students who they're sponsoring from abroad until that finishes. There is, we are looking at how organisations can get from legacy back onto highly trusted sponsor and sponsor new students, and that's part of the work we're doing at the moment.
Thank you. Who else has questions? One in the front and two in the front.
Yeah. All the highly trusted sponsors are coming to the close of expiry. So what is the procedure for the renewal of this?
The renewal, as we've mentioned in our statement of intent, we're actually reviewing at the moment, and once we get the agreement from ministers, we will be publishing the criteria for sponsors to get onto the register and for renewals as well.
Is there a date?
There is, but it will happen soon.
And Julius.
Sorry, it's another question for Barrett. Okay. No surprise there. My question is really about why there's been made a difference between colleges and universities within the new rules, particularly as products are the same in all intents and purposes. I'm thinking about the higher education and why, linking to the English language, suddenly a higher education course that really is the equivalent to first and second year of a degree course suddenly has a B1 level of English, and the indicator that this summer that will change the rules yet again and bring the working hours down from 20 hours a week to 10 hours a week.
Okay. The first question about the differences between universities and colleges, and I would also make distinction between publicly funded colleges and privately funded colleges. Last year, October, our minister, Damien Green, made a major speech, which is still available on our website, about the abuse within the system. And as part of that speech, we published some documentations. We did some research into 18,000 existing students and the abuse within that cohort. And if you look at the figures there, and we're basing it on the evidence that's been there, the evidence which was published, there is a big difference between abuse levels between different sectors within the study, between students publicly funded and privately funded. And when we went through the consultation and we asked a number of tough questions about should we not do this, do that, and information we got, it was decided after discussion throughout Whitehall, because the decisions are made through the Cabinet Committee, that because of the evidence, because of the information, we need to differentiate between certain sectors because of the evidence. And we do that on nearly everything we do in the immigration system. We do things on risk-based. So depending on the risk, depending on the evidence, we base our policy normally on the evidence provided. So that's that one. On the second question, I don't know if I fully understood it, but what we're saying, what we introduced on the 21st of April this year, is that if you're doing NQF 6 or above, and the Scottish equivalent, which I think is 9, if I get it right, it's B2 level. And below that, it's B1. And that's because for, again, based on after the consultation, we, if I can remember rightly, I think we actually asked a specific question on that, on the English language side of things. It's the knowledge of English language you need to do courses degree level or above. So if I understood the question...
Yes, if I can just maybe add there...
Not too much, then.
No,
this
I won't,
is another
but
question
certainly... higher national diplomas and will never accept any students below 5.5 on an IELTS score or equivalent. So why would it be down suddenly to B1, which is level 4? So I think it's about not understanding what the college sector, and I'm talking about the publicly funded mm-hmm. college sector, because, again, we've kind of been linked to all that abuse mm-hmm. that actually was not to do with that sector. I think you need to look at those areas.
I will look at that again, but I would say to you that the evidence published clearly differentiates between privately funded and publicly funded.
One last question in the middle, I think. I saw a hand. Yes.
It's quite similar to what's been asked, the fact that at a publicly funded college we will run level 5, 6 and 7, certainly in the vocational area, which does require the students to have some experience in the workplace, and so therefore we're being penalised against the universities with the reduction. Now I understand that evidence, but if you're saying the evidence was different between public and private, but would it not benefit then that the publicly funded colleges were treated the same as the HEIs?
Well, if you look at the evidence between the HEIs and the publicly funded colleges, there are differences there as well, which is published in our in the information which we did. I can't remember the exact date. It was October, November. But I can send Holly the link to the document on our website.
But I think, you know, I mean, I think what you're... There's a message coming from the floor that you don't understand the college sector, you don't understand the vocational training sector. And even if you've done an assessment in one way which makes us look higher risk, given that we're the most audited sector in the education framework of all, and by the National Audit Office's recent report, we're the most responsive and the most trusted, it really what you should do is come and have a discussion with through the AOC with college representatives and principals about what aspects of what we're doing makes you anxious, and we'll sort that out, rather than step a tier in there and differentiate between universities and colleges.
Okay.
The big product...
No, I'm sorry.
But the big product we have to sell is vocational education abroad. Yeah. You know, when we mention, you know, the young people in Arab countries who need skilling up for work, and where there's a big investment opportunity to bring cash back into the UK, it's for that group, and those group will come to colleges and not universities.
Can I... I will respond to that. We just don't do things in our ivory towers, either in 2 Barsham Street, which is just down the road, our headquarters, Croydon or Sheffield. We do a number of these events. I've been to a number, and so have my colleagues. But one of the most important things we do is we have what we call the Joint Education Task Force, which I'm hope that you'll of all have heard of. The next meeting of the Joint Education Task Force is the 16th of June. And, you know, we do a number of events like this, and we talk to a number of people. But what we always say is we have AOC representatives. We have a number of representatives from all sectors. Mm. And that is where we talk about the sector. My policy colleagues are talking to them during the consultation, basically continuously. We did a number of presentations. Mm. We take the evidence from them. It's not a matter of us just making up the evidence. We have the evidence from our records. And I'm not saying that the abuse within publicly funded colleges is, you know, significant compared to some other things, but if you do look at the evidence, there is that information. So we have spoken to the AOC at length at the Joint Education Task Force, and I would say to you because it's difficult with the resource constraints we have to get out as much as we can to events like this, and we don't shirk events like this. And I've done a number of these, and so are my colleagues. But you do need to talk to your representative on the Joint Education Task Force. You do need to provide them the evidence. They're the main people. They're the ones that we meet on a regular basis, that we discuss. And as I said, the next meeting's on the 16th of June, which is next Thursday. And this is the time, every time I come out, and I'll take what you said back, but you do need to talk to your representatives that we speak to on a regular basis.
Fine, thank you very much. And I'm sorry, I'm sure there are lots more questions that you would like to carry on with, but it wouldn't be fair to this afternoon's speakers to overrun too much further than we have already. Thank you to Barrett for coming to a sort of difficult occasion, and also to our other two speakers. We're back at 10:02 unless we can stretch things a little. Just one further announcement. If Siska Dijk is here from the Dutch Embassy, Alzana Ahmed from the Midlands Academy would like to meet you and can't find you amongst the audience, if you could sort of come down to the stage at the end. But thank you indeed to all three of the rest of us.